A 3-pound premature baby enters the world fighting for survival. Decades later, that same child will discover she spent her entire childhood fighting an enemy she never saw coming, her own mother. This is the reality of Munchausen by proxy, a form of abuse so insidious that even the FBI struggled to track it. When Julie Gregory published her memoir in 2003, she became the first survivor to break the silence around this hidden epidemic, exposing a truth that made Oprah's audience gasp and psychology professionals reconsider everything they thought they knew about maternal love. What happens when the person meant to protect you becomes your greatest threat? And more chilling still, what happens when doctors become unwitting accomplices in your torture? Stop acting all normal when we get in here. Show them how sick you are. This wasn't preparation for a school play. This was Julie's childhood reality. From her earliest memories, she existed as a walking medical mystery, shuttled between doctor's offices in rural Ohio, accumulating diagnoses that never quite made sense. Sandy Gregory approached medicine like a military campaign. Before each appointment, she'd brief Julie on symptoms to emphasize. Failed performances brought rage once they were alone. The cabinet in their double-wide trailer transformed into a pharmaceutical shrine, bottles stacked like trophies of successful medical conquests. Julie's supposed ailments grew like a dark resume. Chronic migraines, heart conditions, mysterious allergies, digestive disorders. Her mother restricted her diet based on fabricated sensitivities, yet paradoxically fed her sugar-laden cake batter that left her perpetually exhausted. The most traumatic procedures involved heart monitoring. At 12, Julie learned to mentally float above her body while nurses spread shaving cream between her barely developed breasts, running razors across her skin to attach monitoring pads. This dissociation, this ability to separate mind from body during violation, would become her survival mechanism throughout childhood. Sandy Gregory wasn't born a monster. Before marriage, she'd performed death-defying stunts with a traveling carnival. The pattern began during visits to Grandma Madge, who would feed Julie strange candies, then convince her she was dying, working the child into hysterical terror. After 5 emergency room trips, Dan finally moved the family away, but the template had been established. Illness as currency, medical crisis as attention, a child's body as battlefield. Settled in Ohio with Dan's Air Force benefits, Sandy found her stage. Dr. Phillips became the first medical professional to unknowingly enable her abuse. Sandy's performance was flawless, the concerned mother in pastel colors and simple blonde wigs appearing utterly normal. Behind closed doors at Hideaway Farm, reality was darker. The isolated property allowed Sandy's abuse to flourish unchecked. Surrounded by junk and neglected rescue horses, the family lived without basic care. Sandy stockpiled guns and once held 2 hikers at gunpoint. To appear respectable, the Gregorys became foster parents, taking in 9 abused children over 6 years. The caseworker missed the hidden guns, Sandy's wig, and the World War II veteran they kept locked away for his disability check. Each foster child developed medical mysteries identical to Julie's symptoms. Sandy made Julie an enforcer, forcing her to beat foster children with a fly swatter. After beating Lloyd until he screamed, Julie began hitting herself instead. The children developed silent signals to protect each other. When Penny disclosed sexual abuse, Sandy violently attacked her, calling her a slut. The next day, Penny vanished, a chilling reminder of what happened to children who spoke truth. At 24, Julie sat in an abnormal psychology class when her professor described Munchausen by proxy, a condition where mothers deliberately make healthy children sick to seek medical attention. The realization hit like shattered glass. Julie fled to a stairwell where the truth crashed over her. All the tests, procedures, surgeries, unnecessary. Every heart catheterization, every monitoring pad ripped from her chest, every pill forced down her throat, all fabricated. Her mother had been poisoning her. Those red matchtip suckers with their metallic taste, the white pills slipped under her tongue before appointments, the mysterious cake batter that left her perpetually exhausted, all tools in Sandy's arsenal, designed to produce symptoms justifying more doctor visits, more tests, more attention. This moment was simultaneously devastating and liberating. Finally, there was a name for her experience. Confirmation she wasn't truly ill. Validation that her suffering had been real, even if her illnesses weren't. But with this clarity came haunting questions. How many years had been stolen? Who was she, if not the sick child her mother had created? Julie's first escape at 16 ended in brutal betrayal. School counselor Mr. Marks called her parents instead of helping, resulting in a savage beating and weekly gaslighting sessions about her overactive imagination. Her successful escape came through accidental exposure. During a breakdown at her hospital job, Julie confessed to her work counselor, who contacted Melissa, the foster care caseworker. Melissa made a surprise visit, took the foster children for a private walk, and immediately removed them, along with Mr. Beck, the hidden World War II veteran. Before leaving, Melissa warned Julie never to admit involvement and gave her an emergency number. When Sandy discovered Julie's role in losing her foster children and their income, she threatened that Dan was coming to kill her. Julie fled to an older man's condo, knowing what would be expected of her there. The next day, Dan took her car with everything she owned, including her beloved dog, PJ. With nothing but her hospital uniform, Julie called Melissa, who placed her in an emergency group home. The court case should have been Julie's vindication. Instead, her parents manipulated the system through a reconciliation session with a counselor who knew nothing about the abuse. On the courthouse steps, Dan convinced Julie the charges were against her, not them. Without her testimony, the court sent her home. Surprisingly, life at home changed dramatically. The fighting stopped. No guns appeared. No one crept into bedrooms at night. Most tellingly, Julie wasn't sick anymore. No heart medications. No doctor visits. This sudden normalcy revealed the truth more powerfully than any testimony. Her illnesses had been manufactured all along, switched off the moment they no longer served Sandy's purposes. After 7 years apart, 31-year-old Julie called her mother. Sandy responded warmly, inviting her to Montana, where she lived with husband Ed and two adopted children, 11-year-old Tina and 4-year-old Paul. The reunion began promisingly. The children called her Big Sissy and presented gifts. That disturbing patterns emerged immediately. Julie noticed hundreds of shoes crammed into storage boxes and complete family isolation. At dinner, Sandy labeled Tina as slow with fetal alcohol syndrome, who won't get past a certain grade level. When Julie tried teaching Tina to cook, Sandy erupted, forbidding stove use and forcing pills into the child's hand. Julie recognized the pattern. The control, the medical focus, the labeling. That night, when Julie expressed concern, Sandy flew into hysterics, bizarrely accusing Julie of trying to steal Ed and threatening suicide with a shotgun. After 3 days, Julie fled, haunted by nightmares of Tina trapped in her childhood nightmare. Sandy hadn't changed. She'd found new victims. Julie faced a terrible dilemma. Call children's services and risk being discredited as her mentally unstable homeless daughter, or stay silent while Tina suffered everything she had endured. Julie's recovery meant reclaiming her body from the medical narrative that had defined her since birth. As she healed, rage surfaced, blind fury that terrified her because it mirrored her mother's behavior. Through Shen therapy, she confronted memories of her fractured younger selves and learned to integrate these parts into a coherent identity beyond illness. In a symbolic act of liberation, she took a mallet to her farmhouse walls, bellowing the names of everyone who'd hurt her. She built a backyard pyre, burning emergency cake boxes and medical records. With only her guitar and a bag of clothes, she drove to Los Angeles, seeking anonymity. But anonymity wasn't enough. Julie's memoir illuminated Munchausen by proxy abuse, helping professionals recognize its signs. The most profound moment comes at the book's end, Julie calling Children's Services about Tina. In that act, she transforms from victim to advocate, breaking the generational cycle. Your childhood doesn't define your future. Julie's voice, once silenced by pills, procedures, and coercion, now echoes for every child whose body became a battlefield. The most dangerous predators often wear devoted parents' masks, and the most effective weapon is refusing to stay silent.